Fishing the Wild West on your first stop for kayak fishing info, Monday through Friday, kayakfishingradio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike, joined by Northwest kayak fishing expert and co-host Isaac the Nothing Miller at the helm in Portland, Oregon. How's it going, Isaac?
Hey, it's going pretty well.
It is. We want to remind listeners, we want to thank you for joining us on the show tonight. We also want to remind you that although the show is on the West Coast, we welcome all your questions and comments about the sport, and we want to hear from you. Log on to the chat room at kayakfishingradio.com or call into the switchboard, and we'll put you on the air, so to speak. There is a Kayak Fishing Radio show on every night, internet radio for kayak fishing, Monday through Friday. And we wrap up the week here, and Isaac and I were just talking, and it's like, what the heck is going on? On the West Coast, if you're not a crabber, there's not much going on because you're just waiting for seasons to come in or conditions to change where you can get out on some fish. Even around me, I'm kind of a lazy fisherman. I'm not going to the absolute best opportunity I could get, which right now would probably be hitting the rivers. I've talked to a few people who are going inshore and going in for some fresh water. There aren't much fish in the reports up here at all. It's all a crab thing. And the crab, they are a producing. That first night of the full moon, 17 Dungeness crabs crawled into two of my pots. And I'm still only fishing the two, but that was a pretty nice day. And took home my limit of 10. And the next day, I think I had 3. The day after that, I had 1. And we'll see how they're doing. Fishing mostly inexpensive poultry in the crab traps for bait. Taking a short paddle off the beach. And looking forward to my first real big back to the Pacific coastal fishing trip is going to be on May the 12th, I'm heading up to Shelter Cove, which is in the very top reaches of the state of California. And to get there from anywhere, you got a long drive ahead of you. Even if you go to the closest airport, which is far away, that's up in Humboldt County, the second to the last county in Northern California on the coast. And quite an event up there. Over 100 kayaks show up and a lot of really veteran sage kayak anglers at this one. For a harmonious vibe kayak fishing event. And they're giving away a kayak this year. Isaac, give me a fish report. Have you got one?
We've got some fishing going on up here. Again, like you mentioned, it's all going to be freshwater fishing. Steelhead is really the big thing. You got really two options right now. You got steelhead on all the rivers, especially those along the coast. I personally try to give it a shot here in town in the Clackamas River. Conditions were right. Clackamas River is flowing at 12 and a half feet, which is like perfect for steelheading, perfect for drifting. Unfortunately, there doesn't appear to be fish in the Clackamas yet.
Those were the conditions you were looking for last week.
Yeah, you know, of the 8 guys that I talked to, there wasn't a single bite amongst everybody. So.
Wow.
Coastal rivers, though, you know, the Wilson River, and I believe the Nestucca, I've been getting some reports out of there. Conditions are perfect, and there are fish. Not large quantities of fish like we've seen in the past, but there are fish there nonetheless. We've got several anglers here in the Northwest, kayak anglers, that have steelhead on the Angler of the Year competition already for the year. So they're out there. It's just not been, you know, like I said, not exactly ideal. So the surf right now is out of control on the Oregon coast. We're currently, what are we at? 9 feet right now on the surf. And it looks like that's as low as it's going to be for the next week, if not more. So
it's probably about that here, heading out to the protected harbor, looking out at the exposed rocks out there. It looked like the surf had all, the swell had all but disappeared compared to what it was last week, where it was approaching 20 feet.
Yeah. So, you know, in the meantime, we do have that freshwater fishing going on. Anglers here are really holding tight. We're listening, waiting for Oregon Fish and Wildlife and Washington Fish and Wildlife to decide the fate of the lower Columbia River sturgeon. That also is with the Willamette River sturgeon.
And that's what kind of season you'll have, if any?
Exactly. And it's currently not looking too great. You know, the sturgeon population's not been doing really well.
It's really having issues, huh?
It's really having issues. Last year, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, yeah, we've got fishermen out there catching fish.
Right. No, that's always the case.
You know, and that happens. You know, we do have a quota system here. And in the last two, maybe 3 years on the lower Columbia River, the fishermen have not met the quota. So
interesting.
It's been open. It's just the catch isn't there. They estimate last year sea lions took home ate more sturgeon out of the lower Columbia than the fishermen did. So, you know, there's a lot of the anglers, you know, they're really upset. They think the states need to be taking care of the sea lions and not putting any further restrictions on the anglers.
That's not a very strong argument, though.
I'm there. I don't think the same way. I mean, we're all responsible here. It's not just the sea lions. Of course, the sea lions aren't helping.
No, there's a big issue there, too, and I have a traditional method for curing it. But, I think the sturgeon population on the Columbia, because I'm looking at the San Francisco Bay Area that has a considerable and so far apparently healthy and sustainable sturgeon population. Now, we're only going after the one species. But it seems to do pretty well. The Columbia has had a lot of pressure for a lot of years on that fish. You've got a lot of guides working on it. It is a major source of tourist or destination fishing, I should say, and for locals as well. I mean, the sturgeon in the Columbia. And while it might be a big river, again, it's only a river, and it's dammed up, and there's lots of issues there. Again, you guys have got salmon issues in the Columbia as well?
Yep.
So I've watched, you know, over the last 10 years that I've been looking real hard, and you see a lot more evidence of this in more recent years, what happened with the Klamath River, what recently happened with the Sacramento River salmon coming through San Francisco, where we had 2.5 years of virtually closed season on salmon. And it did recover. We had a man-made incident on the Klamath River when the water was lost and it killed a lot of salmon. And we were able to get a pretty good laboratory view of how these stocks come back after taking a hard hit. And I think with good management, we'll see that too. I think that the sturgeon alone is too big a resource to be lost, especially in the Northwest. I could see the recreational community getting buffaloed in California, but not up there. And I hope I'm not wrong. A lot of people get mad at me for saying that.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, no one's really taking this sitting down. No one's taking this lightly at all. It's a really big issue. A biologist recently for the state of Washington announced that, you know, we should probably put a moratorium on fishing sturgeon. And that's actually something that I have been saying for years now, 2-3 years now I've been saying.
I'm sure a lot of people have, but a moratorium that's open-ended, a moratorium that's funded with study and a goal to bring it back to where it needs to be.
Yes, absolutely. Agreed.
And I hope that these aren't issues that you know, I believe from what little I know about the Columbia sturgeon population that it is potentially sustainable. It hasn't been ruined by the dams being put up.
Right. Not completely.
Yeah.
They do run through the Bonneville locks.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, they are getting around.
Yeah.
But you know what? So are the sea lions. They're getting through the locks as well. So...
Sea lions, they're a big issue. They're way historically way up further on the river than they ever used to be. Isn't that right?
Yeah. They're at the point now they don't even leave the river. I've heard reports saying that some of these sea lions have never seen salt water.
You know, I just don't understand. If this was a pack of dogs...
It would, yeah.
If this was a pack of dogs, there's no way. While you might have people putting up signs and camping out to save the puppies... If this was a pack of feral dogs that had taken up residence on some land, and this is essentially, I mean, pinnipeds are dogs of the sea. I don't think there's that much difference between the two, especially intelligence-wise. And these are just bad dogs. And the fact that they're federally protected, I think the attention to good lobbying and good environmental practice has to go beyond the extreme political correctness of what that is. And I'll tell you the truth, I've got all the stickers and I know most of the slogans. I know it's a big, big issue up there, but it just seems to be a big back and forth issue with no action whatsoever. I mean, if you look at what we've had our fish and game resources in I know especially California, but this is also, you know, with federal management behind it. The invasive species on the island, saving kit foxes, removing boars and pigs and removing goats, removing deer from cute little deers, too, from Point Reyes, you know. Some of Mother Nature has moved into places that it shouldn't be, and we caused it in the first place.
Exactly.
And that's good management comes with a price, but it has nothing to do with, or it has everything to do with saving the whales and protecting the trees, too. And just because something has to be culled, that's just a fact of good management. And
right.
Don't get me going on that rant. I said no negative show. So what else? I put in a call to Captain Powers over here in Bodega Bay, the man I see in this region who has single-handedly saved party boating. And I hope he stays at the helm. You never know what's going to happen at these landings. But he's got the new Sea Angler, big old boat that goes out, and that's where I've caught my giant squid up here. And he did his first exploratory giant squid trip to the West Cordell Banks last Sunday, and he didn't see any squid. All the conditions were right. Temperature was good. The water color and quality was good. He had caught squid in it before, but he didn't catch any squid. There were gray whales and white-sided Pacific dolphins following the boat, so he just took all these passengers on a big old boat ride, brought them back around to his crab pots, and they all went home with limits of Dungeness crab. And so it's still a fine day.
Yeah.
But I hope he finds those squid, and I think that every year we're going to learn a little bit more about this. I think the squids might be on a much... my guess, my hunch, because I'm always talking natural cycle, and I don't think natural cycle, especially in the fisheries, has much to do with the seasonal and annual cycles. I think it's a much bigger picture. And we might go a lot of years before we see giant squids again. And who knows, there were people measuring a correlation when the salmon were gone, when we had a collapse of the salmon fishery 4 years ago. The squid were here. The squid were thick. Do salmon disappear when the squid show up, or do salmon get impacted when the squid show up? I think the more years they go on, we're going to see more of a picture of all these different species. And, you know, it's amazing in the last 10 years how much more we know, in 20 years especially, about tuna stocks and white sea bass stocks, halibut, You know, that's important to you on the commercial end, you know, on the market end, I should say. And it's funny, when I moved up to what I call Central Northern California, I started talking to all the local guys who were four, five, six generations of fishermen in their family. There aren't too many of them left, you know, empty docks all up and down the coast of the Eastern Pacific and quiet ones where they're not empty. But I talked to them, when's the best time to go halibut fishing up here? Because really on my kayak, I cut my teeth on halibut. And getting back to kayak fishing, I love flatfish fishing, and I swear, I don't care if they're sand dabs the size of your palm, or big, my big experience with flatfish is California halibuts that can go 50 pounds or better. Not that I've ever had a 50-pounder, but I've had lots of 30s and 40s. And I love the flatfish, and I look at these kayak anglers catching fluke and flounder in Connecticut and New York and New Jersey and, you know, further south towards the Chesapeake Bay and flounders down in Florida. And there's flatfish everywhere. And the soles, how many different types of soles? And I tell you, I've seen some soles. I understand why when you go into a hoity-toity restaurant and they have, what, the specials for the night, people spend $28 on a sand dab or a sole dinner or more. And you better believe it, these are great, great fish, especially the great specimens that we get the opportunity to catch. And I've taken calls off the water from people who've pulled up to spots. It seems like you never catch just one flatfish. They're always schooling up and usually spawning when the big ones are in. And another, you know, more kayak fishing. You mind if I ramble here, Isaac?
No, go for it.
I think that as a rule, and especially on the Pacific, I think kayak fishermen use too big hooks. The hooks we use are too big. We're used to using lures that have big hooks on them. We're used to using big baits to target big fish and big hooks that go with them. But I think that if we went back to more traditional methods of catching fish using number six hooks, number four hooks, using strips of squid and little raw shrimps and stuff like that, you'd be amazed at the different species you catch, including especially in the kelp forests here in the Pacific and on the sandy bottoms. There are so many fish that hit our big baits, like some of those flatfish, the soles and the flounders and the turbots. And these things have really tiny, weak mouths. They can't get them around those big hooks. And but they're really aggressive too. And I think on that note that I'm going to start doing some little drifts as the crabs taper out. But it is amazing when you're checking your crab pots how many times you'll find flatfish from soles, flounders, and even halibuts inside your pots. And I talk to the offshore guys who, you know, they have giant lingcod swimming into their pots. Crab pots. But I think we miss an opportunity by only fishing at the best times. And that was getting me back to the halibut fishing up here in Central and Northern California. I know there's a lot of halibut up here. There might not be as many, and I don't think they're generally as big as what we caught in Southern California and Malibu growing up. But there are a lot of fish up here, and they fish it commercially. So I asked these guys who have been fishing for generations around here. And the answer on halibut up here is, oh, yeah, there's halibut are good for about 3 weeks in July. That's when you go fish for them. And they're trying to – and that maybe on a commercial level, and that's a commercial mentality for fishing. But if you look at some of the websites that publish local reports, early as March, guys have gotten out of Tamales Bay and in coastal areas around here, they've gotten halibut. And so if the commercial guys are telling you July and you're seeing them in March on some years, you can figure safely April to May through August, September, you should be able to target and catch halibut if you can narrow down the spots. Some of the spots around here are exceptionally sharky, like the mouth of Tamales Bay. But I talk to guys up here who go diving in the mouth of Tamales Bay to shoot halibut, and nobody's had an issue, so what the heck?
Yeah.
I guess it's sharky everywhere.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, it brings up a good point, using the smaller fish or the smaller hooks, and, you know, broadening your target. I think it's a wonderful idea. You know, I've picked up two flounder in the last couple of years, and those somehow bit into, what is that? About a 4-aught hook.
A giant hook.
A giant hook. You know, I bet I'd catch a lot more if I do downsize.
Now, what kind of conditions? Were those coastal conditions? Or were you in the bay?
Coastal.
You know, a lot of these flatfish will slide into the little bays and the harbors, the natural harbors, and they spawn in there. And here in Bodega Bay, where, you know, you got probably a mile to get into the back of the harbor, you got a couple of nice restaurants out there with their dining rooms built out over the edge of the dock. And there's a period of time when those flatfish, the halibut, the California halibut, they come in and they spawn, and everything you'll catch will be a 24 or 26 inch fish. They'll all be the same size, but the bottom will be covered, and you'll get your limit really fast. And knowing when to target that and take a look at that and going out there with 10-pound test, that's a lot of fun. That's some fun fishing.
No, that does sound like a good time.
Where else are we going with all of this, Isaac? I wanted to ask you what kind of events you have rolling up here. Is there anything in the winter, or we got to wait till spring?
Right now we're kind of waiting to hear what's going to be decided by Fish and Wildlife as far as the sturgeon goes. So I know we will have, it'll probably be late February, a kayak sturgeon tournament hosted by Next Adventure Paddle Sports here in Portland.
That's as early as February, you say?
Right, late February.
And that'll be on the river?
That will. That'll be on the Columbia and Willamette Rivers.
What kind of turnout did you get for that?
Last year, I want to say there was probably 15 to 20 people.
Nice. That's a nice event to get going.
Yeah. So that was last year. And then otherwise, the only other tournament I know of is the Oregon Rockfish Classic. And that will be, again, Depot Bay, Oregon. And that looks like it's going to be Father's Day or the week after Father's Day. So that one's still kind of up in the open, but they'll have a date nailed down real soon. So.
And how many people turn out to that one? I love that, too. The classic, too.
Oh, yeah. What did we get for the Rockfish Classic? We get a couple dozen people. I think we get 25, 26 people last year.
You know, that's good. I've always wanted to do an article on the different tournaments and events that go on. And now it's just crazy coast to coast. I mean, I think the biggest of all of them is the Jacksonville event. And then you got other people calling their, you know, everything they do is the biggest for their region or their coast or their body of water. But there are so many events that go on. I mean, if you just nail it down state by state, and then on top of that, you've got Heroes on the Water that has a blanket of events going on, too. There's a lot of tie-in with other events for Heroes. But there is a significant little industry in kayak fishing going on here. I'm not sure it's so little either, because it really reaches from one end of the spectrum to the other. And these events are fun. I got to tell you, I've been to a lot of, what would you call these, recreational events? Yeah. And the kayak fishing events have got to be the most diverse turnout of people. And I don't know, maybe everybody says this about their own special interests, But it's the food, man. It's the food. And the food has always been a big, great part of fishing. But when you walk through an event camp and you start smelling the smells, you know, and especially during abalone season, I was talking earlier about the Shelter Cove event going on May the 12th up in Humboldt County. I forgot that they've got abalone season going on as well. So you can be assured that come 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to hear the pounding, you know, going on in camp. And it gets that really tribal feel because sometimes you hear 2, 3, 4 dozen, you know, different camps. The pounding of abalone starts. And I'm really excited about this one. It's close to our cabin in Happy Camp, too. So, and it's on Michelle's birthday is May the 11th, which I'm sure, of course, you know, it's like some national holiday. So I think there's going to be a big vacation surrounding that whole Shelter Cove thing. So, but I think an article on the little events, the events that are not, you know, around the big fishing centers that are still drawing, like you say, 2 dozen anglers. There's a lot of those, and those are really an important part of the fabric, I think, of the community of kayak fishing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that, you know, for example, the boondoggles on yakangler.com.
Absolutely.
You know, they've got 2, 3, 4 boondoggles a year where they just gather up at a campground and go fishing for a weekend. You know, it's not even a tournament series.
You know, I got to think that
have fun.
Go ahead, Isaac.
Yeah, like I said, they just get together, you know, at a campground, fish, and have fun, you know, as an organized event.
And that's going on with website forums across the country and all the great fisheries. And there's so much going on in places that we rarely get the chance on our show to talk about, you know, like Ohio and Pennsylvania and the Great Lakes and even Michigan and Wisconsin, where the sport's really, really taken off. You look at some of the major brands of kayaks and how many boats they sell to states like Michigan. You wouldn't believe how many fishing kayaks and how many kayak anglers there are. But where was I bringing that around to? Oh, I lost my thought again.
Talking about the small get-togethers.
You know, and it really, there is no better talk for kayak fishing radio than the talk of boondoggles. And seeing them go forward. And, you know, I've been giving it a lot of talk. I mean, a boondoggle might be enough to get you down here fishing. And I think it's all in the planning because I think we might have a few people wanting to come from far and wide. So I was thinking it might not be too far down the road, especially with schedules being what they are, to plan a boondoggle for the middle of October.
Middle of October is a good time for me.
Right up here on the North Coast.
And, you know, you mentioned the Shelter Cove tournament.
It's Ocean. Yeah, the Shelter Cove tournament's in Humboldt, and that's in in May.
And that's just a 10-hour drive for me.
Well, then you got to do it.
Looking here. Dude,
Make a vacation. We'll go to Happy Camp. I have heard nothing but good about this event from everybody who goes to it, and I know they come from far and wide. And in a very, very fast time, he's gotten over 100 kayaks fishing this thing. There aren't too many events of that size that I like to go spend my 3 days at. But it's one of the most beautiful spots on the planet, I tell you. For a coastal destination, and I'm really, really excited about it. So that's going to be May the 12th, and we're going to be looking at doing a boondoggle in Sonoma County, and that would be a fly into San Francisco to make that easy and painless, around the middle of October, and we'll get those dates nailed down as well. It's a pretty easy pull-off. There's not much planning to be done at all. So I'm excited about that, too, showing some people. You know, one of the great things about boondoggles is you end up hooking up with a lot of people who really can use the experience of getting out on a day with people that are eager and hungry to fish as they are and have done it before in those waters. So I think we're going to draw a few people from around who haven't been out there trying to whack some big lingcods and cabazons and go home with a bright red rockfish for the first time. I like those vermilions. I finally figured out how to prepare them.
Fresh rockfish tacos.
There isn't fresh rockfish, what?
Tacos.
Tacos?
Yeah.
It really is, you know, another thing I want to write is my recipe book. But the problem is everything I want to write a recipe on, like tacos, and it's I have 200 recipes.
Yeah.
So this thing, it would be epic in proportion. But,
you know,
no, actually, I'd probably have to.
We could talk about this. The West Coast or the Pacific Coast seafood cookbook.
It's going to be an angler's seafood cookbook because I would really want to target. I think we should target a cookbook for people who are catching their fish.
Yeah.
So, and there's a bunch of stuff in that regard that we're going to put into the next kayak fishing video, and which I thought was real important. You know, one day I was down. This is a good lesson. How people cut fish, I think really, they don't think about it. People cut fish like they've been cutting fish since they were kids. In a lot of cases, they just gut and gill and prepare a whole fish. They don't know how to fillet. And a lot of people, especially people who've been on party boats, know how to turn that knife and eviscerate a fish right across that sweet, fresh meat like they did on the party boats. And one day I was, the whole time I was down in Mexico, I watched these guys who were the fish cutters. And they cut a few fish differently. If you ever saw somebody cut a triggerfish, in Spanish, a triggerfish is called bota, which means boot. And you need a really, like a hammer and a sharp knife to fillet these fish. But it's also one of the, it's like a tile fish, and it's really a delicious, delicious meat. Real opaque in color. It looks almost hard gelatinous and cooks up white and firm. Really, really delicious. In fact, Doug Olander from Sport Fishing Magazine finally convinced me to throw one whole without even gutting the fish, which I did anyway. It's got a little tiny gut sack on it. Throw it whole with that leather skin onto a red-hot coals and cook it and eat it that way. It's one of the best fish I've ever had. I watched the fish cutters in Mexico, and on some days, especially when the tuna came in, these guys would be cleaning hundreds of fish. And the way they cut out the fillets on every fish, especially the tuna, and when you watch somebody cut four fillets out of 100 tuna without really eviscerating the fish, cutting into the belly, you learn how to cut fish. You learn how to cut bloodlines out of fish with bloodlines. And then some of the different species, the snappers. But that's something I'd like to put into, you know, my next video effort. And probably I'll put up soon on the website is videos of how to cut and clean. And I'd like it to be all the species that we catch here in North America, you know.
Okay, that sounds excellent to me. You know, that's
I think that would be cool. I think that would be very, very cool.
So that would be fun.
Grab those production notes and...
Yeah, I love watching other people cut fish just to see what they're doing.
I've been using the internet for a lot of such resource lately, and it really is fantastic. And you know, I think the whole internet resource is just so new. A lot of times we don't think of what we could get, you know, just searching for information. And I got to tell you what, I learned how to make a raccoon hat.
There you go.
I haven't done it yet, but the problem went away by itself. And I think there's just about anything, you know, it's skin and prep anything. Somebody's made a video and put it up on the internet, I guess mostly through YouTube.
Yep.
Mexico fishing, San Diego fishing. I'm really wondering what's going on, you know. I got to believe that the whole Mexico thing, tourist numbers is down, down, down. I got to admit that I don't read the Western Outdoor News. It's not as accessible as it used to be. as much as I used to. And I'm sure everybody promotes that, you know, it hasn't skipped a beat. I got to believe that fishing in Mexico is down, and maybe fishing Costa Rica and Panama is up. And I do like fishing those tropical species, but coming up in Old Mexico, by the time I left there, it wasn't the same place that I had started taking people down to. And I would like to get back into that tropical scene. I checked out Puerto Rico earlier last year, and while I loved it and I'm going to go back, I probably wouldn't use it as a destination for kayak fishing. But I think Costa Rica and Panama might offer real adventurous anglers the opportunity to get into some pretty incredible tropical fishing. So I think we're going to look forward to that. But there are a lot of opportunities in North America, and that's what I realized when I didn't want to return and keep doing trips to Mexico, that there were a lot of opportunities in North America. And I got to tell you, the Texas Gulf, the California coast, you know, we're on that natural cycle, and there are such great opportunities. There are some guys up north talking about mothershipping trips to get on the albacore, which is not as outlandish as it might sound, especially given the right conditions coming together to pull something like that off. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's going to happen every year. I think if those giant squid show up, or I shouldn't say it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I'm just wondering from the past conversation if that when might be in 10 or 15 years from now. You just never know.
Right.
But getting trips like that, but I always liked that tropical thing, you know, and there are opportunities, I think that go beyond Mexico and offer to tell you the truth, what I believe to be better fisheries, fisheries that haven't been so severely impacted. And there weren't too many days when I fished in Mexico, where you had that glorious kayak fishing trip that you used to have. And I think that in places like Costa Rica and Panama that are really growing their fishing tourism and have barely touched a speck of their coastline, that especially for a kayak kind of trip, that would pan out. I hope that next year we have the same kind of ocean conditions and a better salmon turnout than we had this year. I think that'll give a lot of kayak anglers from far and wide an opportunity to get into some real big game fishing without going far.
Yeah.
You know, running out in front of Bodega Bay. I mean, I don't know how many days of opportunity you get further up the coast you get, but if there aren't storms welling in the Pacific, there's a pretty doable swell out in front of Bodega Bay. And just, you know, paddling within a few miles a day is all it takes to get 25-plus pound salmons. And that's my kind of salmon fishing, I tell you. It's my kind of kayak fishing. I love that big stuff. And I got to tell you, I do miss Mexico. I really, everything about Mexico saddens me. You know, it's really a bummer. It used to be one of my favorite places in the world, and now it's not even a place I would consider going. And it's sad but true, but I mean, you know, our endorsements are important, and I just think that, and I hope and have the best wishes and prayers that Mexico will turn itself around, because I've got a lot of friends in Mexico, and I really love the people, and I love the place. And it's just a bummer what's happened there, man. But, and again, the politics, I mean, it's way beyond the crime thing, the politics of the fishery and everything else. I mean, it's just, there's a real, you know, from social, political, all the way around the corner. It's hard to affect change. And when you've got the issues that you've got, you know, which, speaking of that, you know, it's hard to affect change. We got our own issues. I shouldn't be bashing our southern neighbor when I should be bashing our own elected officials. What really scares me, Isaac, about this whole political thing going on now, I mean, we're coming off the heels of a real bad recession and still a very shaky economy, a very, very divisive. I mean, we've been saying it for a few years now. We've got a more divisive public right down the middle than we've ever had. And not that they're close at the middle. They're complete on opposite sides. There's a lot of division in America, and I'm afraid right now with the way things are that attention to fishery politics on the side of angler-hunter rights is really going to take a beating. And I don't think that electing one side or the other is going to fix it. I think it's the state of affairs of where we're at, and it makes it even that much more important for every one of us. And I'm not talking about this. I do this the best I can. Every one of us to get with our lobbying group, our local and regional lobbying groups, and sign on to, help me out here,
Keep America Fishing?
.org. KeepAmericaFishing.org and get active and let all your local politicians know. It is amazing. They count those emails that come in. You know, they count those phone calls. And they count all those letters. And they do have a voice. And just let them know in the back of their heads. Because there are sympathetic elected officials out there and representatives. And they do listen to the voice. They do know that counts. But if they don't hear that voice, they're not listening to anything. And it doesn't matter what your politics or your beliefs are and whether you think it's worth a dang or not. The bottom line is you can have the satisfaction knowing that you tried to do something. And more often than not, it's probably going to have some kind of an effect by having your voice heard. But I'm really scared right now because we're going into a political process to get a candidate on the GOP side to run against Obama. And there's either love on one side or hate on the other, and there ain't no middle to anything right now. And I don't think anybody's talking about hunting rights or fishery or anything. They're just so lost in other issues and trying to get their boys in office that it's really scary. And I don't think we're making loud enough of a stink, and we need to do that. So I'm going to stop that rant right there and highly suggest that that you contact your law, you get involved and you stay involved and you go to a barbecue to raise money for some good cause for the fishery. You know, speaking about all these tournament and events, I get a lot of calls for we'd like you to supply our prize or prizes or support this raffle or support this cause. And I think it's really important that, you know, while a lot of companies have a caveat that anything they support has to support some kind of charitable cause, but I think with my company we go a step further. That charitable cause better, those charitable causes better include a fishery cause too, because as much as I love the Diabetic Association and the Cure for Breast Cancer and the Cancer Society, this is fishing, and I think we are moving the health of people forward. Not that these are bad causes, these are good causes, but I don't like seeing events being conducted, kayak fishing events, solely to support those causes. We need to give back to the fishery. That's why we're doing these events. That's one of the reasons we're doing these events. And giving back to the fishery is really important. And, you know, it's like a social consciousness. And so many of us are socially and consciously unaware of the fishery causes that are at our feet. Maybe we don't socialize in the right places. Maybe we don't shop in the right shops. But and maybe it's not comfortable for everybody to talk about on the beach. But I'm quite the thumper when it comes to those causes. And I appreciate you letting me take the time here, Isaac.
Absolutely. You know, getting close to the end of the show here, I thought we'd start talking about some good stuff.
I like it.
All right. Big news on the internet, if you haven't seen it. Andy Cho in Hawaii. Do you know Andy Cho at all?
Andy did it again, didn't he?
He did.
Was that the up for?
Yes. 52 pounds. Albacore tuna, which of course they call in Hawaii.
Tombo.
And you know what? I saw a lot of that tombo at the store. People love that stuff. Yeah, he picked that up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a week ago now. But, yeah, 52-pound tuna on the kayak, unassisted. You know, Andy Cho, if you haven't heard about him, awesome kayak angler out of Hawaii. And to be honest, I've spoken with and followed several of the kayak fishermen down in Hawaii. They are all awesome. I'm sorry. These guys are nuts. They catch some amazingly awesome fish. There's some great guys down there. You know, Andy Cho, Isaac Brumigan, or something like that. I'm sure.
Yeah, that's it. That's Isaac.
Yeah. A couple other guys down there also.
The Ueda brothers. You can't go without the Ueda brothers.
That's, of course. Absolutely not.
And I got to tell you, in the kayak fishing world, these guys are really legends. It has become, for all of us, it's become such a lifestyle pursuit. It's not a hobby, sport fishing, thus kayak fishing. And that's the bottom line on it. But for these guys who have such incredible waters, literally miles from their houses and where they live.
Yeah.
And they're doing it. They are absolutely, from tuna to wahoo to billfish, everything. And, you know, it's funny, one of the Ueda boys contacted me to log a kayak fishing record for marlin, and I told him because of stuff that I saw happen in Mexico that I didn't want to promote fishing for marlin on the kayaks. But the truth is, as time goes on, I see how the sport has grown, and I realize anglers are not stupid, you know, and I think it's time to publish some records.
Yeah. These guys do some killer stuff down there. If you haven't seen anything about these guys in Hawaii, it's real easy. You can get
them
Andy,
Aquahunters.
Isaac, yep, and the brothers at aquahunters.com. They actually just rebuilt their website. It looks really slick. I like
it. Aquahunters?
Yeah.
I have to take a look at it.
You should. It's really great.
Roger, that's one of the websites I stay in touch with, and I get all the press releases from those guys too. I talk to them on a fairly regular basis. Do you know Troutman, Adam Troutman?
I do not.
Trout goes between San Diego and Hawaii, and he's way hooked up with these guys. Fishes with them all the time, stays in touch, and he's a regular contributor at the Aqua Hunters forums. But, yeah, this is a great, great bunch of kayak anglers. And they're really, man, they're taking the sport forward where they're fishing. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, they definitely are. They're spreading the good word. You know, I can talk to Isaac and see if we can get him on the show here. I was going to get him on to the older West Coast show back when it was just me. And he was just too busy. It was peak fishing season down there in Hawaii, so we just missed up, but it looks like he might be available. I'll see if we can get him up on the show for sure one of these days.
Isaac, did you get old Bill hooked up there on the chat room, or did you not have the benefit of it?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
Did you get old Bill hooked up on the chat room there?
No, I didn't. I'm in the chat room. I don't see anybody in there. We got a couple of guests in there, but I couldn't get anybody to log in so that they can interact and chat with us on the chat room. So I didn't see if we have somebody else peek in and out.
Yeah, so I just did a little one-handed typing there. My apologies. If you're listening, Bill, thanks for tuning in tonight. We get a lot of archive hits on the show, so we keep it going for nearly the hour here, but I think we are about to sign in. You are listening.
Yeah.
Thanks. And where are you listening from there? The benefit Topeka today. On the road traveling, are you? Where's your home fishery? It's cold in Kansas. Where's your home fishery there, Bill? Anyway, I think we're going to bring it to a sign-off. Isaac, you okay with that?
Yeah.
Are
sure.
You okay? I hope you get some time on the water here, my friend.
Oh, you bet I will.
Oh, so Bill's tuning in from Topeka, and we appreciate that. And if you tune in next week, Bill, we will get into that chat room early, and we'll talk some fishing with you. We appreciate it. Want to thank everybody for joining us tonight on Kayak Fishing, the Wild West Show on Kayak Fishing Radio. We'll be back next Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Appreciate your tuning in. And we'll be back here and looking at East Kansas next week. Have a good week. Keep it fishy.